Thanks very much, Rennie, and thanks very much for coming along. I do realise, though, that I think this is the third session, so I'm the person standing between you and lunch. I'll try and keep it brief. I guess TEA, what is TEA? Well, I'm old enough to know that TEA means Trans Australia Airlines, you know, so up, the friendly way, etc. But more seriously, tactical asset allocation, there's a bit of an argument as to whether it adds value or doesn't add value. There are people in the marketplace that believe it doesn't, therefore they passively invest with respect to their multi-sector portfolios and diversified strategies. And there are people like ourselves in the marketplace that believe you can add value over time. Basically, we're looking for mispricing across and between asset classes. We're also looking for the ability to move a little bit above, a little bit below the strategic position to try and enhance value to the portfolio. The question, I guess, as you can see up here, is has TEA delivered in general? That's in general globally, but also in general in the case of Australia. And also, what is the evidence to date? The evidence to date, I have to say, is quite mixed, which is why you get that range of passive through active and therefore some question marks as to whether you should or shouldn't. But nonetheless, what we determined here was the evidence, A, is scarce, and second of all, is largely inconclusive for a number of factors. So we thought, let's put a bit of an academic hat on here and have a look at some long-term evidence, which happens to be our own, because it's the only one we really know, as opposed to going into the marketplace. We'll leave that to research houses, etc. And then have a look and what can we see. What we found in terms of getting a key message is we found we can provide consistent, repeatable value add over the long term from TAA. What are we talking about here? We're talking about basically trying to add 50 basis points, that's half of 1% per annum, to your diversified funds over and above the strategic benchmark. What we also find is in recent years has been not only specialty, as we would class ourselves, but additional specialty being put into TEA resources. Now, you might recall in the last few years we've seen the advent of GTA funds and hedge funds and what have you. So obviously we're going down this track of specialty and more focused. And of course, as with single sector strategies, the more focused you become, the better potentially you become at it, and therefore the greater the return from it. So what we're saying is if single sectors have gone down the approach of focused managers delivering and getting good returns on the back of it, why shouldn't it be the case that TEA, as a separate space, if it also is focused, can deliver some pretty good alpha as well? So what we're going to look at here is that question of significant change. If you've upscaled your TEA capabilities, let's say in the last 4 or 5 years, has that made a material difference to actual outcomes in the portfolio? What we'll find here, because we do have that suite of evidence, is that it does, it can, and it does. How does it fit in then with the bias towards sector specialty in Australia? Now, I tend to focus a lot more on the managing the money side of it as opposed to the industry, you know, the retail mechanics of it and sort of how it flows in general. But what I would say is that if you have a focus and sector specialist and everyone's focusing on that and time limitations are strict on all of us in terms of administration and the likes, who is actually managing from the bigger picture perspective the appropriate mix of assets, the appropriate tilting, if you like, between asset classes, if you believe that the tilting can actually materially add value? So we're raising the question now, and we'll leave it basically as an open question to you at the end for consideration. So what we're querying here, first of all, is tactical asset allocation. Does it matter? And the evidence is basically mixed, but perhaps biased to the negative. We're saying that the interaction between asset classes is being ignored to some extent. So the asset classes being fixed and equities here and overseas, global property and listed property, etc. And we're saying that the sector specialists are fully utilised, and we're arguing that maybe there should be more utilisation of this side of the equation. So what is the entree to the evidence, as I call it? Well, I can recall going to an asset allocation summit in March of this year. It was held in Sydney. Unluckily, it wasn't in Tahiti or someplace like that. Nonetheless, what did I find? Probably a key theme, asset allocation is back. And you might recall after the boom of the 1990s and the tech rise, etc., TEA didn't make money for you. Why? It was all about sector specialty. It was all about picking stocks. It was all about buying News Corp and 60 times PE and saying it was going to go on forever. But of course, then that came to an end, and all of a sudden now we're finding ourselves, example witnessed the last few weeks, of a major market hiatus where you probably would want to have the capacity to think about diversification and think about switching from asset classes and also have the expertise to actually do that, or at least rely on someone who does have that expertise. One thing that came out of the Asset Allocation Summit, in fact, four things, sorry. First of all, diversification is still the key. And I think the academic evidence goes back a long way, Brinson and what have you, to say that that is quite strong. Secondly, there was a big focus on alpha-beta separation. And what TEA is, effectively, is alpha from beta. I mean, when you're basically able to go long or short, a little bit overweight or a little bit underweight, let's say the Australian equity market or international equity market, in principle, you're doing it through derivatives, futures and swaps and the like. And in principle, what you're doing is you're taking a decision, moving away from benchmark to try and add value to the portfolio. So you're creating an alpha opportunity, but in doing it, you're basically buying or selling the market beta. You're buying or selling the index. So it's not alpha, as in an equity strategy where your stock outperformance relative to benchmark is going to make money. It's alpha from beta. The alternatives focus was clear as well. Now, that's interesting from a number of factors. Alternative investments. Direct property is now an alternative investment. Direct property, I think, has been owned by businesses and consumers and householders and what have you for how many hundreds of years, but all of a sudden now it's an alternative asset. It's interesting how it all comes back. But nonetheless, within the alternative asset space, we're talking about infrastructure, we're talking about commodities, we're talking about private equity and those sorts of structures. There's quite a large focus on that. And also, asset class breadth came into play. In our own case, when I started nearly 5 years ago now, I had six choices for TEA, overweight or underweight, Australian equities, Australian LPTs, global equities, international fixed, local fixed. So six choices, basically. I now have 14 choices to make. So those alternative buckets, the other strategies that we can employ as well. And so we've got a wider breadth of choice. There's more in scope. But also within that, we've given greater latitude to take TEA conviction. So when I say latitude, as an example, one fund, which is the fund I manage, I'm referring to here, has a 70% growth bias. I can take that 70% growth bias up to 90. Now, that's a large conviction in terms of TAA. And to give an example, 2 months ago, we were at 86% in growth assets, so overweight by 16%. In the last 2 months, we've been pulling it back. We went basically to neutral probably about 3 weeks ago. As of yesterday and today, I've started to buy a little bit back into the market. So what I'm giving you an idea of here is we can have strong conviction, employ a large part of the range in TEA, hopefully on the back of good market performance, which is promoted by the modelling. And then if we think we've made enough, our logic was in the first 6 months of this year, we made 12 months worth of return, let's pull the risk off the table, come back, sit back and square, wait for something to occur, and then basically edge back in again. That's sort of the thinking in a very simplified fashion that we're doing at the moment. The research studies. The classic one was about 20 years ago, Brinson. It's an overseas study. All he said was asset allocation works. You know, diversification works for you if you basically spread your risk, etc. You haven't got all your eggs in one basket and it's all fine. He did say that the benefits of TEA was limited, but he didn't really explore TEA. He really was focused on TEA as a general sort of concept. And in essence, there were mixed views, you know, about TEA. The studies in Australia are very scarce. I've highlighted three here. First of all, from research house Mercer, which in 2000 wrote a paper on TEA, used a short time frame for TEA analysis, but nonetheless, it was a good starting point. Secondly, an academic analysis done in 2005, Pfaff et al., who did some work on whether TEA adds value. And more recently, quite a comprehensive report done by Standard & Poor's on the diversified fund industry, which had about 20 different fund managers and quite a range of probably, I think, was as much as 250 diversified products, which focused on the issue of not only diversified funds, which includes TEA, but also the stock selection within it. So what I'm looking to do is address the evidence and then look at the evidence in light of the practical experience that I've seen where I work and ask, you know, can we learn anything from it? In general, what would I say? As far as the evidence is concerned, it's mixed, and I would say it's biased to the negative. So probably not a good starting point. But nonetheless, we highlighted the studies are scarce, and also they're not that robust. Now, when I say not that robust, it's not my assertion that it's robust is actually the research house assertions that they're not robust, and I'll come back to that. What did Pfaff and others say in their academic piece in December of 2005? Active managers were unable to deliver superior returns through TAA. The Mercer survey, traditional active balanced fund managers subtract value. Specialist managers can add value. Overlay managers can moderately increase your return risk ratio. But what they also highlighted was a lack of long-term performance history, and that made conclusions difficult. So that's that robustness thing coming through. Standard & Poor's in the June 2007 report highlighted there was no evidence that active TA added value. Second of all, it was very difficult to extract information from managers. And third of all, couched in their whole study was that long-term analysis was not possible due to significant change in the management and also the TA process and the diversified fund processes in the last 5 or 6 years. So when I looked at that, I thought, okay, let's have a look at our own funds and sort of stack it up against that, because we do have a long term. We don't find it difficult to extract information because we've got it. We're actually using 17 years worth of information, which is pretty well a long term. We've been a specialist manager through the whole period, but we've substantially added skill 5 years ago, four and a half years ago. So what we thought was, we can look at the whole period and test for it, look at the last 5 years, test for it, look at the prior years, test for that, and see whether there is statistical significance between those relationships. So, as I said, at worst, value destructing, at best, value adding, lack of consistency. Find the long-term track record of a specialist manager, see what it did over the long term, and look at whether significant change matters. And this is what we did. In our particular case, we classify ourselves as an active TA specialist manager. We've been doing this for over 20 years on the core funds. The sample period for the analysis, this is the academic part of it, if you like, is 17 years. What we're looking at here is the managed growth strategy, why it just happens to be a flagship product, if you like, for the group. It's about $3.5 billion in size at the moment. So it's not a small fund which is in and out. It's actually something which is quite material and it's got some longevity. It's got a 70-30 growth defensive mix. What's the process? From March 2003, we enhanced our processes substantially. We moved down the track of what we call a 3D TEA process. What does 3D mean? We're focused on three key concepts or contributors towards working out what the TEA decision should be at any period in time. First one being macro fundamentals, second one being market psychology and sentiment, and the third one being valuation. So what we're trying to do is just group logically a whole lot of elements and components into their core factors, getting signals from all those things, and then using that quantitative background to assist with the qualitative, let's call it the manager skill part of it, why you're employed, combining them to see if we can actually come out with something which is meaningful and adds value. We tend to have high conviction, as I mentioned earlier, by example. As I mentioned also, we've got that wider asset class breadth. We want to have the opportunity to invest in many things, not that we have to invest in all of them, but have the opportunity there such that if something arises, we can put our money to work in that area. We tend to have a 3 to 12 month horizon on TEA. Anything beyond 12 months in my area moves into the strategic asset allocation or SAA space. Most of the work we're doing uses derivatives, total return swaps, options and the like, so we're tending to implement our TEA via futures mainly. Why? It's efficient. It can be done very, very quickly. I can put large positions on in a matter of 10 minutes as opposed to wait for 1 or 2 or 3 days to get them on and or take them off. And obviously, as a result of that, we've got a very strong risk control framework. Clearly, bearing situations in Singapore is something which has left an indelible imprint on many people's minds. And what are we doing in terms of research? We want to look at the long-term effects of TEA. We want to see if significant change is significant. We want to compare the active which with what we call the enhanced active style. You know, since we went down the track of since March of 2003, has it done better or not? So this is what we're doing. Look at active TEA over 17 years. Look at the period up to March 2003. Have a look at that. Have a look at that. And compare these and just see what we get out of it. And this is what we find from the long-term analysis, that first section. So we're talking now from the period September 90 to June 2007. We've added 4 basis points per month to TEA. So annualised, what does that mean? Over the 17 years, we've added 46 basis points per annum. Now, 46 basis points per annum is pretty healthy. We have now a target of 50 basis points per annum. Perhaps in the late 80s, early 90s, the target would have been lower. The risk budget certainly would have been lower, probably around 25 or 35 basis points per annum. But what we have here is a tracking error of around 0.91, but in particular, an information ratio of about 0.5. So it's accretive, it adds to value. But when I look at the statistically the significance of this over the long term, what's the comfort factor you would have from investing in this strategy as an alpha generator? It comes down to the T statistic, which is based on these numbers. And from the T statistics, you can just do a simple probability formula to calculate this, which basically says there's a 98.2% probability that manager skill has been added over the 17 years to generate TEA value add of 4 basis points per month, i.e. 48 basis points over an annual period each year for 17 years. So that was a reasonably good start. Then what we did is say, okay, let's look at that point of when we went to, you know, extra or enhanced specialist, which is this period, yeah, March 03 to June 07. That's when the 3DTA process came into play and we went down that extended route. And this is the pre-3D period. I don't want to focus on too many numbers, but just a few things. There was a strong rise in TA value add from the pre-enhanced period where it was 31 basis points per annum to now 90 basis points per annum. So 50 is the target, you're delivering 90 per annum, so it's basically meaning you're running at about 80% above on a per annum basis for nearly 5 years. You're running above your objective. The second thing is there's a strong reduction in risk. You can see here, this one here, the risk number was 0.99%, i.e. 1% over the pre-enhanced period, and it's basically reduced by about 50%. So isn't it good that you've added more value, and in doing that you've reduced your risk to do it? And what does that mean? The thing we all know, the information ratio has vastly improved. Over the pre-enhanced period it was 0.31, it's now 1.46. I'm reasonably comfortable with that. I'd like that to continue. What it highlights also, though, is there's been a sharp rise in manager skills since that enhanced process came about. And that's coming back up to these numbers. You might recall that 98.2%. When you break it down to its two areas, we've come from an 86% probability, which isn't that bad, to basically 99.9. So it makes me feel, at least in terms of the bigger picture, it's adding value. In terms of going down the enhanced route, it's adding more value, is more consistent, more robust, and more repeatable. I think that's the key message we have from this example. So I said I would keep it short. Our view is, in this particular case, which is a practical example, it's an internal example, I haven't got the wherewithal to go out to the marketplace and look at everyone else's strategies and analyse it. But in this particular case, it is highlighted that TEA can deliver. It can deliver over a long period, first of all. If you have a specialty approach, it works. If you enhance that specialty approach and you become very focused on it, what's basically highlighting is it works even better. And the manager skill component goes up. Why? Because you're focused on it, just like the single sector strategy. If you do anything well and you commit lots of resources to it, the chances are it's going to do better for you rather than not. We've also tested whether the change made in the last 5 years was material. That's process enhancements and resources. And what we found that is it does materially improve the TA value add, does it with reduced risk, basically the consistent, repeatable thing over the long term. And it highlights that manager skill has been coming through. So just some takeaways. And this is more where my colleague Vinny, you started or prepared the discussion this morning and just recently. How does it fit in with the trend to sector specialist programs? So I would argue that there's a reasonable case to be made that TEA has been bypassed in consideration. And why would that be the case? Well, there was a lack of evidence, and that's a fair point. Second of all, there was a lack of robustness, which sort of undermines the quality of some of the research findings. It certainly leaves a question mark in my mind when I look at it. Third of all, they're mixed views, so it's not as if you've got, you know, 5 or 10 articles of which, you know, 4 or 9 are basically saying, you know, this is a very valid strategy. It's actually quite mixed. There's a lot of uncertainty associated with it. And indeed, the point I mentioned, not enough specialty. So it leaves the question, who is looking after the interaction between asset classes? That was one example of evidence. I'm sure others will provide their own examples of evidence as well. But nonetheless, what we're highlighting is that TA specialists can add value. I think it's worthy of consideration in the general industry context of trying to add value, not just from stock selection, but also from a sense of managing your asset classes in a diversified context. So I'll leave it there.